Live from Buffalo Creek. Esther chapter 8. And we'll start there in verse 3. And Esther spake yet again before the king, and fell down at his feet, and besought him with tears to put away the mischief of Haman the Agagite, and his device that he had devised against the Jews. Then the king held out the golden scepter toward Esther. So Esther arose and stood before the king, and said, "If it please the king, and if I have found favor in his sight, and the thing seem right before the king, and I be pleasing in his eyes, let it be written to reverse the letters devised by Haman, the son of Hammedatha the Agagite, which he wrote to destroy the Jews, which are in all the provinces. For how can I endure to see the evil that shall come unto my people? Or how can I endure to see the destruction of my kindred?" Now, in verses 1 and 2, we had found out that the king, Ahasuerus, he rewarded Haman, or not Haman, he rewarded Mordecai and Esther. In fact, gave him everything that belonged to the house of Haman, who had just been executed. And even though she appreciated the king's gesture of kindness and his bestowal of wealth upon her, it's interesting to me that she was more concerned, more motivated by the fate of her people and their imminent destruction. And again, she had to come before the king unbidden. That tells you something about the moral excellence of Esther. Possessions, power, wealth really meant nothing to her as long as her people, the Jews, were appointed destruction. She was more concerned about their welfare than her own life, her own wealth, her own prestige. And I thought as I read this, she was willing to really give her life, because if the king rejected her, which he wouldn't have done, but she could have lost her life in coming unbidden before this heathen king. I thought, we ought to have the same kind of concern for people who are lost, who are, they're destroying their lives through sin and ungodliness, and they're in darkness, and they're in captivity to Satan. They can't see what's wrong. And we ought to daily petition our King to deliver them, to save them, to open up doors for us to walk through, to be a witness to them of the power and the glory of the Lord Jesus Christ. Because these are people who are under the wrath of God. They are delivered to destruction in their natural state. Their only hope is in Jesus Christ. You know, Paul had a similar expression in Romans 10 and verse 1. He said, "Brethren, my heart's desire and prayer to God for Israel is that they might be saved." And I believe it was in Romans 9 where he talked about wishing himself to be accursed for his brethren's sake. You see, people, her people, Esther's people, were under the curse of the law that had been issued by this heathen king, much in the same way that sinners are under the curse of the law. Galatians 3 and verse 10. Well, she risked her life. She sought an audience with the king without being bidden to come. And I'm amazed by the way that Esther approached and spoke to the king. She did so with great humility, with reverence. She also shows how much compassion, how much concern that she had for her people. And she requests that he overturn Haman's decree concerning the destruction of the Jews. Now this ought to tell you something. Haman was dead. He had been publicly humiliated, shamed, and then executed by order of the king. But his influence lived on. What you do in this life lives on in your legacy. Some people have a greater legacy than others, and some for good and some for evil. You know, I was studying this morning. I'm preaching a sermon this morning on communion with Christ. And I've got a book by A.W. Pink, Spiritual Communion and Communion. And I got to thinking how much good his writings have done for me and for people all around the world. I've profited greatly from the legacy of A.W. Pink. And he was not a popular writer in the day and age in which he lived. In fact, many considered him to be way too strong in his views and writings. But as time went on, people began to read the writings of Pink. Some of his writings are unequaled on the sovereignty of God, on the atonement. One of my favorite books that he ever read that he ever wrote was Profiting from the Word, just a little volume. But what you do has an impact after you're gone. Haman had such wicked designs against the people of God. And you know what? When he died, that decree did not die with him. His influence did not die. It was in the Persian Empire, once a decree was signed, it couldn't be reversed. It had to be carried out. And I thought, think about the influence of Karl Marx and his political and social theories. They have ruined much of society, brought ruin to entire nations. Just last century, 100 million people were killed in the name of Marxism, communism, under the decrees of Stalin and Mao Zedong and others. And you would think that that would be enough to completely bury that philosophy. But it's raised its ugly head in our nation. It's being taught to our young people in universities. And they're graduating with a genuine hatred for America. Think of the legacy that lives on with Charles Darwin. He taught perhaps one of the most influential theories that has advanced atheism, maybe more than any. When you add up, because what he did was basically said, you can just throw out Genesis. It's not true. God, in the beginning, God created. That's a lie. But when you combine the writings, the theories of evolution and what they've done, we are in a distinct minority who actually believe that God is the creator. That when we look out, we recognize that there is intelligent design that God created this world in 6 literal days. And that He's the one that's upholding it by His power. We're in a decided minority. Sadly, churches are not even teaching creation. And young people go off to high school, college, and they learn the theory of evolution. They embrace it. They deny the Scriptures. When you combine evolution and Marxism, you have a toxic mix that results in atheism, infidelity, immorality, no accountability before God. You see, what you do lives on. And some have a greater impact than others. In the case of Haman, if Esther would not have gone into the king again, the Jews would have been exterminated. That decree would have went forth. But she besought the king in tears. Her heart was broken over the plight of her people. You know, the example of Esther and her concern, her compassion, her willingness to put herself out there for others, it ought to convict us. We need to pray fervently for the lost. We need to live lives that show them there's a better way, that there is forgiveness with God. And when we have opportunity, which could be every day, we ought to tell them about the death, the burial, and resurrection of Christ as the power of God unto salvation to everyone that believeth, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. Our hearts ought to be broken. We ought to be going forth weeping and bearing precious seed. Sadly, we get caught up in the cares of this life. And we fail to pray, we fail to act, we fail to witness. We're selfish. We think more of ourselves than those who are in need of salvation that we enjoy every day. All that God would cause us to regain the zeal and concern that we've had in the past for lost sinners. That a day would not pass where we didn't witness and pray for the lost. Now there's another edict sent forth in verse 7. Then the king Ahasuerus said unto Esther the queen and to Mordecai the Jew, behold, I have given Esther the house of Haman, and him they have hanged upon the gallows because he laid his hand upon the Jews. Write ye also for the Jews as it liketh you, as it pleases you, in the king's name, and seal it with the king's ring, for the writing which is written in the king's name and sealed with the king's ring, may no man reverse. The king explains to Esther that the edict of Haman could not be reversed. I find something so ironic here, though. So providential. Haman was the one who concocted this whole scheme to exterminate the Jews. And why did he do it? Because of Mordecai. Mordecai wouldn't bow. He hated him. He despised this little Jew. When he saw him every day, he's the only one in the kingdom that would not pay him homage and respect. And in a ironic turn of providence, the guy that had planned the execution of Mordecai which he would have been hung publicly on the gallows that Haman had prepared. Instead, Haman was executed. And then after the intervention of Esther, when she came and presented the case of the Jews before the king, he says that the decree's been sent forth. It can't be reversed. But Mordecai, you go ahead and write another decree, another edict to protect the Jews. Do it whatever way pleases you. I thought, how amazing is this? Here is this guy who rose from out of complete obscurity, who even after he had foiled the assassination attempt on the king's life, had not been rewarded until now. And now he's basically second in command here, and he is writing edicts and decrees that will protect these Jews. God can use people in unlikely ways. He can bring the lowly and the poor and the downtrodden and raise them up and use them for His glory. Now, there's something similar about the decree of the Persians. You know, God's decrees cannot be altered. Concerning the salvation of His elect and the damnation of unbelievers. Fact is, we don't know who the elect are. There's nothing that identifies them outwardly or by their speech. That's why we're commanded, Jesus said, preach the gospel to every creature. Go into all the world. So we should expend every effort possible to get the gospel to every creature. And then from this, again, I want to reiterate, how often do we consider that the things we do and say from day to day have far-reaching consequences that sometimes can't be altered? There are things that you do, good or bad, that will affect you the rest of your life. And you have to learn how to deal with that. H.D. Kennedy said, how much there is in every life that cannot be reversed. When a bullet is left a gun, it cannot be called back. So with the words spoken, the deeds done, or the influences started, when they have once gone from us, they are no longer under our control. Ahasuerus did manage to have other letters sent out, endeavoring to offset the deadly effect of Haman's decree that he had endorsed. But even then, there were many conflicts. So it is with everyone who was done wrong. The habits formed, the appetites developed, and the passions indulged in will to some extent bother a man until his dying day. Oh, how that should make us very thoughtful and meditative about what we think about, what we do, what we say, where we go, how we live. Because the universal laws of sowing and reaping are not altered for anyone. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. Well, the king grants the Jews the authority to defend themselves from attack. says in verse 9, then were the king's scribes called at that time in the third month, that is the month Sivan, on the 23rd day thereof, and it was written according to all that Mordecai commanded unto the Jews, and to the lieutenants and the deputies and rulers of the provinces which are from India unto Ethiopia, 127 provinces, unto every province according to the writing thereof, and unto every people after their language, and to the Jews according to their writing, and according to their language. And he wrote in the name of Ahasuerus, he wrote in the king Ahasuerus' name, sealed it with the king's ring, and sent letters by post on horseback, and riders on mules, camels, and young dromedaries. Wherein the king granted the Jews which were in every city to gather themselves together and to stand for their life, to destroy, to slay, to cause to perish all the power of the people and province that would assault them, both little ones and women, and to take the spoil of them for a prey. Think about this. Mordecai came up with a great plan. He gave the Jews the authority to defend themselves from attack. And the king signed it, sealed it, and they immediately sent it out. And they would have approximately 7 months to prepare to defend themselves. Those letters were sent swiftly. I read somewhere that some camels are able to travel 100 miles in a day. That's a lot of miles. Now verses 13 and 14, you already got one. You got a red truck. I don't know what it is. It's not a camel, but you got a really nice red truck. And then there are other times you got a chauffeur in Phil. Carries you everywhere. Man, you got it made, brother. You got better than camels. Now, you know what? We're going to stop there because I don't have time to finish everything that I want to get to. So we'll stop there and just take away some thoughts. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Years before, when Saul had faced the Agagites and God told him to destroy everything, he didn't. He spared Agag, the king, the leader. And now you're reaping that result. Now, I did mention that early on in this lesson.